Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the Friday Filibuster.
Welcome to another edition of the Friday Filibuster. I am Judge David Johnson, and joined by Judge Eric Ashwischlager.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, and Judge Mac McIntyre.
Pizza, pizza.
All right, mine. Wait, is that that's Little Caesar, isn't it?
That's Little Caesars.
You know, I was just thinking of the Noid recently. Remember the Noid?
Oh, of course.
Sure. Yeah, whatever happened? I mean, was like, why was he? I mean, he wasn't like the most subtle character, you know. But wouldn't you? That's what people do now. They bring back a lot of these old school mascots. Like, do you think the Noid could ever make a comeback?
I don't know. Will they get like the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight treatment?
Reboot the Noid.
Now the Noid was Domino's, right?
Domino's, yes.
Right. Well, Domino's is sort of in a whole rebranding process.
They are. That's true. Now is the time to strike.
Although I don't know, they're trying to go for this like better tasting pizza thing. Maybe they want to stay away from an ugly rabbit guy or something. I don't know what the Noid was, but
I know what was his deal. I'm trying to think.
He was the competition's. He was working for the competition. He was ruining the pizza, so they always said avoid the Noid and go to Domino's.
Oh, okay.
All right. I think it's maybe it's some sort of like New York accent nerd thing, like like Boyd, kind of like a gangster. Not gangsta, but gangster type of thing. I don't know.
That might be a YouTube search just to reacquaint myself with that particular marketing scheme. So
I just remember the catchphrase was avoid the Noid.
Yeah, avoid the Noid. Well, I guess the Noid would come back before the Wendy's Where's the Beef lady, right?
Well, yeah, she's probably long dead.
Probably long dead. That is an excellent question. Where's the Beef lady, dead or not dead?
So check out Snopes.com and we'll find out. You know, I'm wondering, so you had the Noid.
Yes.
You had Little Caesar.
I guess he was Pizza Pizza, very good, yeah.
What other, like, pizza-related mascots were there? Like, Pizza Hut didn't have one.
Pizza Hut didn't. Anytime I go to a Pizza Hut, it was just all these prints of, like, Italian immigrants carrying sticks on their back.
Yeah, I mostly associate Pizza Hut with, like, Land Before Time puppets, that kind of thing. They always have those like.
Did they do Land Before Time promotions?
Yeah, they did. Like when Land Before Time came out, they had it for several movies. These sort of like little rubber puppets that were kind of cramped your hand when you put them on, but that was like their promotion.
I think I'm kind of with you here. Yeah.
But they didn't have a mascot, and I'm kind of blanking on any other major pizza chains out there.
Yeah, I don't think
Papa Gino's has a
no, or Papa John's. I don't think they have. Yeah, they haven't been along.
Got that guy, like an actual guy. I think who owns.
That's
the,
right. Yeah,
owns it.
He goes around and cooks pizza for people. That's what he does. Yeah. So, oh, wow. Well, that was a stimulating conversation. Thank you, Mac.
Thank you, Mac Crazy Bread McIntyre.
That's right.
I love Crazy Bread. Man, just lots of memories of just ordering Little Caesars and watching Knicks games at home, just like chowing on crazy bread. Good time. Well,
so speaking of pizza chains and mascots, did Oskin Eats Pizzeria in Utica, New York have a mascot?
Well, I had the guy. I mean, he had kind of the portly Italian chef.
True.
He's kind of every pizza place has that.
Everyone does. But they really kind of made him part of the. I guess part of the branding, I suppose. But he's got just holding up his pie, and because I got an Oskin Eats shirt, I think he's on that. So
yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, so that's an excellent question.
They did like the Oskin Eats ogre or something like that. Something. I start with O. I guess you can find
that's true. They're kind of limited. You got ogre. You got Oksana Bayul. Maybe she can. Well, anyway, boy, you had to bring up Oskin Eats Pizza. Now I want to eat it.
I know. I'm so hungry now.
Speaking of which, now Eric, you did visit us in New Hampshire briefly.
Yes,
nice layover. We cooked up some sort of Oskin Eats homemade pizza. What'd you think of that?
It was good. We'll call it Oskin Eats style.
Oskin Eats style pizza. Yes, obviously we don't have access to grease and ovens, unfortunately. So.
No. It was very good. This is a now, Dave. I'm going to guess that 99.999% of our listening audience has no idea what Oskin Eats style pizza is. So why don't you enlighten us? Let's turn the channel to the.
That's right. All right. Well, Oskin Eats Pizzeria is a family owned pizzeria in Utica, New York. They've grown. They have swelled to two locations since they've first opened. One in
franchise.
Yes, one in Eastern Utica, East Utica, and the other in West Utica, I believe. And it's a pizza that I ate growing up and loved and adored. And anytime I bring friends down there, or college friends, and Eric's been force-fed Oskin Eats Pizza many, many times. You know, the authentic.
There was no force.
He embraced it. And it's just a very unique kind of pizza. I mean, before I describe it, Eric, have you come across it, anything like that at all?
No, and it's such a simple concept, I'm surprised, but no one else has done it before.
So it's a totally different kind of pizza, and so this is kind of – I'm addressing this to you, Mac, and to the greater listenership as well. But what they do is they bake the pizza. You know, they put the cheese on, toppings under the cheese, layer cheese on it, bake it, and then when it comes out, they ladle warm sauce on it and then top it off with grated cheese. And that's
so there's no sauce to start. It's just the crust.
That's right.
Cheese toppings. Zero, no sauce. Bake sauce at the end.
Yes, yeah, sauce comes on at the end. So
sauce on top. Plus some Parmesan cheese, right?
That's right. Yep. That's right. Yeah. So some grated cheese there. So it could be a little sloppy, but man, it's just a world beater.
It's good, and I noticed, you know, when you made it the other night, you know, the crust gets a nice kind of crispiness to it, you know, because the sauce, there's no sogginess in the sauce.
Right.
The cheese forms a barrier. It's a nice textural contrast.
Thank you, Eric. And it took a little while because we were looking for the right dough. We finally found some good dough. It heats up nice and quick, so it does maintain that kind of doughy type of crust. The sauce was a big challenge. Like, we tried Ragu pizza sauce, and that was just like watery garbage. And we tried all kinds of things. But then at my local grocery store right around the corner here, I stumbled upon the very pizza sauce that I used when I worked in a pizzeria in Utica. How crazy is that? There you go. And it's like a fresh tomato sauce. And so it's not super runny, you know, and it's just kind of a chunky, tasty, fresh sauce. So it just worked out. It worked out totally. So if you're ever in Utica, usually you drive through Utica to get to places. So if you do a layover, seek out Oskin Eats Pizzeria. You know, maybe they'd sponsor DVD Verdict in some kind of contest.
Oh man, you just sponsor us with pizza.
Yes. So instead of money, we'll just take pizza.
Dave, I think you've just described the dream job.
That is a great job.
Working for pizza, I think I could do that. Yeah, well, so this has been DVD Verdict Pizza Cast. If you want to write to us, you can write to us at.
Well, you know, we cover everything here. We really do cover so much between roller derby and movies that were popular 10 years ago and
absolutely
pizza. So, well, speaking of that, you got any old news to report, Eric?
Oh, well, I guess sort of. This is part thanks to you, Dave. When I stopped through, you lent me some DVDs.
Oh, yes, right.
And I've been burning through old Tales from the Crypt episodes like they're going out of style.
Nice. Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, I genuinely love that kind of show.
I love
the twist ending stories. I used to read them all the time when I was like a teenager. I went through this huge phase when I was reading all these short stories. And, you know, I love Tales from the Crypt, and I love Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Twilight Zone. This is kind of ties into my my kind of lusting after the recently released Twilight Zone season one Blu-ray.
And I'm with you too. There's just something about a nice contained short story with a satisfying twist ending. You know,
I love it. And even though, like, I would say at least 70% of the kind of televised short stories, excluding Twilight Zone, because those are pretty high quality. You know, they're not all that satisfying. You know, going through Tales from the Crypt, I watched season one a while ago, but now I've watched seasons two and three, and I've just started season four. You know, season two, kind of hit or miss. Pretty lackluster, I have to say. Season three definitely stepped it up, though. I mean, there were some great episodes in that.
Is that
one.
When they were just packing it with, like, A-list directors?
Yeah. I mean, really, really starting season three, and even in season four so far, there's, like, the first episode in season four has, like, Tom Hanks and Frances Sternhagen and all these names I'm blanking on, you know. It's just like watching the credits at the beginning. It was like all these people, who many of whom are on for like 2 minutes, and that's it. But it's just packed with all these people. But season three was really good. But I think my favorite episode from that season. There are a lot of great ones.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through here. I got a couple favorites here. What's yours?
Yeah. Well, the one that really struck me for some reason. Maybe it's not the best episode of the season, but it really worked for me. Was one with John Lovitz as the actor, the struggling actor.
Yes. His looks, right?
Yeah. That one, I really liked it because I should have seen the twist coming. They really throw in pepper in so many hints as to what's going to happen at the end, but I was kind of just like taken aback by it. And then looking back through the episode, I realized there are all these little clues, these things that are right in your face, but they're happening at the same time all this other kind of crazy stuff is going on that you just sort of push them out of your brain. At least I did. And that I found to be really satisfying. I think I know the one that you're going to.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Go for it.
You mentioned it on the show before, I think. Okay. Is it the Lumberjack one?
Is that on that one? I like the Lumberjack. Is that?
Yeah, I remember that one.
I like that one.
Because I went to watch it. I was like, oh, yeah, Dave already told me the ending to that one.
So. Yes. It's got a pretty nasty ending, too.
It does. Yeah, that definitely does. No, what's your pick?
Some other ones I liked was Carry On Death with the killer. You know, he's handcuffed to the motorcycle cop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and, See, this one had like a kind of a Goonies slant. The Undertaking Parlor, you remember that one?
Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And then,
in fact, I think Data from Goonies was one of the kids.
Oh, he may have been. Yes, he's like perpetually casted in those kinds of roles. and then, lastly, one of my favorites was Morning Mess. It's the one where they're killing homeless people.
Oh, yeah. That one was sort of – they sort of telegraphed the ending pretty
early. That's true. The ending was telegraphed, but –
But, you know, still.
It does come out of nowhere, so I appreciate it.
I mean, the nice thing about, you know, the show is that it is intentionally kind of cheesy. You know, it's not pretending to be anything other
than – very
pulpy.
Yeah, very dark comedy.
Yeah.
Feels like it's based on, you know – comic books for sure.
Yeah. And if you ever come across it, I highly recommend. They did a Tales from the Crypt radio series not that long ago. It was probably either while the series was going on or not too long after. And so they did these audio versions, not stories from the series as far as I know, but other ones. Although I think Carry and Death had a version of that story or something very similar that was one of the radio ones, but I picked it up at the library, as I do everything else, a while back, and they're like their books on tape section, and it was really awesome. I definitely recommend that. So
now, I don't remember which season it is, but there was one that I really liked about it was another one about an actor going out for a role in Shakespeare, and then I don't want to give too much away on that one.
With an actor in Shakespeare, because the John Lovitz one was an actor.
Oh, was it? Yeah, no, this one. Yeah. Wait a minute. Maybe I'm thinking the same thing.
It's one where he finds a sort of a call sheet on a board.
That's it. Yep, and that's the one. Yep. You saw it. So that's the one where the it's an asylum, right? And is that
yes?
The,
yeah.
Yes, that's okay.
Yeah. And that's, and since you've already given that away,
who cares?
Yeah, the great thing about that episode is that
1991.
There are so many clues as to what's going on. I mean, the fact that the director guy who's a famous actor, and I'm.
Yes, he is.
I think it was. Wasn't he Gomez and the Addams?
Yeah, family? I believe so. Yes.
Oh yeah. And
anyway, his name. He's insane. But you sort of expect New York City actors to be. I mean, directors to be insane, so you don't really question it. And you know, while they're going through the guy who John Lovitz kills to get the part, you know, reaches back and he pulls the tag off of his costume, and he's like, "What's this?" But then. You don't really focus on that because John Lovitz is strangling him, and then there's the phone ringing in the background, and you don't really notice that. And
it's
a great episode.
It is a very good episode.
It's really well put together.
And a nice little nasty twist when they find out the actual role that he's playing. You know.
Yes. Excellent.
So all right. Well, I'm glad. And I do say though, the very end seasons are pretty tough. they're not great. I think.
They shifted away
from HBO. I thought. And they put like almost like a pay cable, so
it's right,
watered down and lame. So
okay. Yeah. Wasn't the last season produced in England or something?
And it was very reminiscent of the last season of Airwolf, which is not a compliment.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'll be working my way through that at the rate that I'm going pretty quickly. I'm surprised at how quickly I'm going through this stuff, but I'm eating them up.
Nice. Very good. All right. Mac, how about you?
Let's see here. Actually, we're getting into October now, and there's actually quite a few movies coming out that are kind of interesting for one reason or another. So I was wondering if we could kind of go down the list here and kind of just get our thoughts on what's coming out. So we've got The Social Network, the new David Fincher movie about the creation of Facebook.
Yeah, written by Aaron Sorkin, I think, right?
That's right, yeah. This has been getting just huge reviews. Everyone who's seen advanced showings of it has just loved the movie. I don't know, what do you guys think?
I agree with what you say. Everyone's loved it, so I mean, that might be a rental on our end, but I have heard good things, too.
Yeah, I was skeptical at first, but I mean, it's Fincher, so I'm kind of curious to see what he's come up with.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does with it. I actually read the book that it's loosely based on, Accidental Billionaires. I forget who wrote it. But it was the same kind of very sensational telling of Mark Zuckerberg's, you know, forming a Facebook and the guys he screwed over in the process. Although for as much as it kind of set itself up as this, you know, tale of, you know, sex and drugs and betrayal and all this stuff, it was kind of, I don't know, tame. There weren't a whole lot of like really crazy things that happened. So they'll probably play it up a bit more for the movie. But I was sort of surprised that based on the book that I read, this movie is getting the kind of crazy reviews that it's getting. So I want to check it out eventually.
We also have the Let Me In, which is the remake of the excellent foreign film that Let the Right One In. Starring Chloe Moretz, I think her name is, from Kick-Ass. Craziness with vampires there.
That's right. So it's like it won't die. Whatever.
Well, you know, what was in the original film was kind of, you know, the anti-Twilight. It made vampires kind of creepy and icky and scary.
Yeah, I never saw it.
It's too romantic. It's a really good movie. Definitely a very sort of cold and moody, but that was good because it's about vampires and it should be cold and dark and moody. So I'm really skeptical about this remake, but that's another one that people are saying they really liked. And she was surprisingly good in Kick-Ass, so I'm really on the fence about this one. I'm not sure.
Right. I'm kind of done with vampires. Same way that I'm kind of done with zombies.
Yeah. What does that leave you? I mean,
I don't know. I guess normal stuff.
Okay.
Well, actually, it doesn't leave me with Tales from the Crypt, so I'm kind of screwed. That's plenty of zombie and vampire stuff.
Oh, yeah. What's the next horror thing to shamble in the pop culture consciousness?
Well, funny you ask, because also in October we got a new movie from Wes Craven, My Soul to Take. Something about a teenager who's been possessed by the serial killer, and the murders are happening, but he thinks he doesn't know if he's the one that's doing it.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw a trailer for this a while ago. It's like the night that this serial killer was caught or killed is the same night these seven kids were born or something, and they've all grown up, and now he's back or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. That's my.
Yeah, we need another serial killer possession. I mean, Child's Play was the last one that jumps out at me. You know, as a serial killer possession movie.
Right,
so.
Yeah. There's, what was the one with Denzel, Fallen? Or?
Oh, yeah, Fallen, right. That was like a straight demon. That wasn't like a serial killer, you know?
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I mean, a serial killer's got to have something to possess. I mean, you got to eat all. That's pretty creepy. Maybe impractical, but creepy. I mean, yeah. I don't know what else you can possess. Pizza, that'd be pretty good.
That'd be good. That's right.
I'm actually looking forward to this one just because it's Wes Craven. You know, I'll go see anything he does because even his bombs are still interesting. So.
Nice.
I just want to interject and say that if I were going to make a pizza serial killer movie,
yes,
call it By the Slice.
It's pretty good.
There you go.
That works. That's very good.
And I'm out.
I like it. All right, let's see. Anything else, Mac?
Last one, we've got Red, based on the Warren Ellis comic book. And a really huge cast, and it's Bruce Willis, Helen Mirren, and Morgan Freeman, or a bunch of CIA like agents or spies or whatever. They've all been fired, and then they go find out why they were fired, and there's a lot of gunfights and explosions.
All right. So what's the top one on that list that you're most excited for?
I'm going to say probably, based on just the directors, I'm going to say Social Network for Fincher and Soul to Take for Wes Craven.
All right. Okay.
It's looking like October is a big month for home video releases, too. There's a ton of Blu-ray releases coming out from the Back to the Future trilogy to the Alien anthology to a bunch of cool Criterion stuff. So October is going to be a busy month.
All right. Let's see. What are we doing here? Just kind of I haven't really watched any new TV shows at all. Like, nothing new. So, I mean, we have Hawaii Five-0 still languishing on our DVR. But beyond that, it's just been kind of, I mean, stuff that relates to the party, too, like Fringe and whatnot. But it hasn't been anything new. Have you guys caught anything new that you like in this new
TV season? I haven't, and I'll tell you why. Well, one of the reasons why. We set up to record a bunch of stuff on our DVR that was new and that seemed vaguely interesting. And then our DVR was having trouble playing things back. So on the device of our ISP, I rebooted it.
Yes.
And it erased the entire. But I'd seen everything that I wanted to see, and so I wasn't that upset that I missed, like, the events and Bleep My Dad Says and that kind of stuff. So it was all like, I think it was a sign from above that I'll stick with the shows that I've been watching, and I think that'll be just fine.
I did catch the second episode of The Event.
Yeah, and? Oh, yeah, that's right. You weren't high on the first one, right?
I actually didn't see the first one.
Okay.
So this second one was my introduction to the universe of The Event.
All right, how was it?
I'm not all that impressed, I'm afraid. All the time jumping was really overdone. You know, it's 14 years ago, and we only spend like 30 seconds 14 years ago, and then it's 5 years from now, and then it was 10 minutes ago, and then it was, you know, 8 hours from now, and it's like it was too much. They went overboard with it.
Yeah. All right. Well.
And also, I must admit, I actually violated my boycott, and I watched No Ordinary Family.
Okay, and that's been on our DVR too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So clear it out for the space or what? I mean, what is it? What's the verdict?
Well, you know, I thought it was pretty terrible.
That suits with what a lot of people have been saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, for one thing, the voiceover, you know. Every time you take a screenwriting class, a teacher will, one of the first things they'll say is, you know, don't use a narrating voiceover in your script, right? And everyone always says, oh, yeah, but what about Fight Club? What about Arrested Development? What about, you know, Sunset Boulevard? And they said, no, never use a voiceover narration. Well, scripts like No Ordinary Family, that's why you don't use the voiceover narration. It was handled really badly. It was just, it's like all of the establishing the characters and who they are and their relationships to each other was all done in a voiceover instead of just as part of the story. And that really ticked me off. And then the Chiklis starts out narrating the episode. And then like 15 minutes in, suddenly, the actress playing his wife, Julie Benz, then she becomes the narrator for like the rest of the episode. And you never switch narrators in the middle of your script. That's just a big no-no. So stuff like that just really ticked me off.
All right. All right, we'll steer clear.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say.
This guy, Michael Chiklis, I don't know what you see in him, Dave.
What are you talking about?
Oh man,
have you ever seen The Shield?
No, well, after Fantastic Four, and now after this, why on earth would I ever want to watch The Shield?
The Shield came before all that stuff, Smarty Pants. By the way,
it's like, you know, it's like saying, oh, you know, I saw all these terrible Eddie Murphy movies, and I don't know why anyone thought he was funny on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, is it? Okay. That's, well, maybe I'm
shooting. Harrison Ford was in that awful movie with Brendan Fraser. I could possibly like anything that guy has done.
There you go.
All right, I'm going to quit shooting my mouth off.
I don't know Michael Chiklis' work at all. I've never seen The Shield. I don't know why I'm defending him.
But you know that I've long professed my undying love for The Shield on this.
I know. It's you know, solidarity, I suppose.
Plus, if I ever met him, you know, he could, like, you know, break my neck with just one flex of his elbow, too. So.
Plus, he's a local guy, and he's very
active, really?
Autism issues. So there you go. He's a Boston guy, so.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Ah.
There you go.
Got
maybe even Worcester. I don't know. Maybe even Worcester.
Wow.
Yeah.
In fact, I think he lives right next door.
Actually, everybody welcome Michael Chiklis to the show right now. All right, let's move along to what we've been doing for the site. Let's run right through this. Eric, what do you got?
All right, well, a couple things this week. First of all, I'm going to keep the Friday filibuster rush love alive. this week I reviewed the Eagle Rock Classic Albums series. They covered two of Rush's best albums, 2112 and Moving Pictures. And it was a lot of fun if you're a Rush fan. which I don't think either of you guys are, you would enjoy it. And if Mike Rubino were on here, we could talk about it for a while, but since he's not, we won't. And then also, I'm reviewing the new Ken Burns baseball documentary, The 10th Inning, which is airing this week and hits DVD and Blu-ray, I think, next week. But it covers basically the time period after his original massive baseball documentary ended, so from 1992 to the present. So it's a four-hour documentary. It covers, you know, a lot of stuff that people think of nowadays and they think of baseball, like the steroid scandal and the Yankees dynasty and the Boston Red Sox, dramatic 2004 comeback and the rise.
I'm going to ask if there's any Red Sox love in there.
Yeah, there is. It's interesting because I, wasn't paying too close attention to baseball until the late 90s. Being a New England guy, of course, jumped in with the Red Sox before they got to be good. My hatred of the Yankees was formed early on. But watching this this documentary, they start in the early 90s, during a time when the Yankees were actually like underdogs. I mean, sure, Steinbrenner is a jerk, and yeah, he spent all this money and stuff, but they hadn't won in a long time for them anyway. And the description of the 1996 World Series against the Atlanta Braves, and they were down two games, and they had this dramatic comeback, and I almost found myself rooting for them. It was kind of a weird thing.
Speaking of which, I that reminds me of a Red Sox documentary detailing their 2004 comeback that I reviewed for the site, featuring an interview with none other than Michael Chiklis.
there you go.
Enjoy and really boosting the Red Sox. So there you go. He's not all bad.
You're coming back to haunt me.
Oh man! All right. How about you, Mac?
Finished up my review of the second season of Castle, now on DVD. I'll echo what I've said before. It's a great show, one of my favorite shows currently on the air. Second season was great, just a whole string of just excellent episodes. Just great dialogue, great characters. They really upped the stakes with the cases and the mysteries. They were a lot more improved over the first season, and it's all around great show. It's like I said in the review, it's like pure entertainment. It does its job. And also, I've got the Irish animated film Secret of the Kells. Actually, it's not The Kells, just Secret of Kells, which I saw last spring. We talked about it on the podcast then, but really, really cool animated film about some monks in medieval Ireland trying to complete their illuminated manuscript before the Vikings come and kill them all.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm all about the Vikings. Very good.
Yeah. Oh, the Vikings are real scary in this. They're only shown in silhouette, so they're like really menacing.
Very good.
I think Vikings could be the next, like, vampires and...
I think so. I think you're seeing... there's been a couple movies out here that really have... There's that movie with Pathfinder.
Right.
Pretty not great movie, but the Vikings are definitely bastards in that. And actually, speaking of that, I guess I could talk about what I reviewed, but it's not very interesting. It includes another Ghost Hunters, like a Ghost Hunters series, which I get these sent to me now for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why. They're all the same. There's a rabid following to it. Like, I reviewed Ghost Hunters once, and I got like several feedbacks, which is some kind of record. Yeah. So this one, I didn't have a lot of good. It's called Paranormal State on A&E. So I don't know. They just do the same kind of thing, night vision and record and analyze everything. And if they hear a sound, that means Lucifer is on the way or something like that. Well, my favorite episode, and it was a family was feeling tormented by the paranormal in their log cabin, and they came to realize that when they had built their log cabin by chopping down some trees in the nearby forest, they had disrupted the spirits. So what they planted a tree, and the spirits went away. So that's good.
So one little sapling made up.
That's like, apparently
cutting an acre,
according to the footage I saw. So, I don't want to talk anymore about that. I will say this, and this isn't a review. It'll be coming out. The movie's coming out next month, actually November. And Mac, I've been telling you how badly I want to see this movie, and I finally did see it. It's Centurion, And right. Because I couldn't find it anywhere, but then I realized that it was available like through Amazon Unboxed Video and on demand. So I had like some credit for Amazon Unboxed Video, so I sprung for that, and I finally watched Amazon here, watched Centurion here in the comfort of my own home, and I enjoyed it actually. Kind of a nice, very violent, but an enjoyable kind of hack and slash movie about Romans stranded on the wrong side of Britain and being chased by, you know, like the Picts, they're called, and they kind of got to fight their way through. So, you know, pretty straightforward and a plot we've all seen before, but bloody and cool. So
That's directed by someone really well known, isn't it?
Neil Marshall. He did
The Descent.
Descent and what is that other one? Oh, that action movie.
Doomsday.
Yes. So I did like that, and I fully endorse it. All right, well, that's all. Let's move on to what, Mac?
Oh, well, why don't we take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. For those of you playing along at home, we are going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and go to the cover art gallery for October 5th. And it's a huge week. There's a lot of good stuff on here, a lot of major releases.
Yeah, my wife really wants me to – looks like Beauty and the Beast will become part of our collection very soon here.
Long-awaited Blu-ray, right?
Yep.
Got a very good review by Clark Douglas earlier this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he gave it a very high score.
All right.
There's Ken Burns, baseball.
Yes, very nice.
And another Ben 10 Alien Force release right there, Mac, huh?
Volume 9, yep. So, boy, it seems like the other one just came out. I guess by doing so few episodes per disc, they're able to keep them coming out on a regular basis. Not that I'm complaining.
Let's see. Ooh, there's another family film, The Human Centipede.
Oh. Yeah. I still have nightmares from Pat Bromley's description.
Yeah, just the description of it messed me up. So,
so who's going to actually go to the store and like pick that off the shelf and walk up to the checkout girl and say, "I'm going to buy this"?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's probably easier to buy since it's called The Human Centipede and not a bunch of humans sewn together mouth to anus.
That's true.
Well, there's a Delgo, Dave. That's a movie.
Yes, Delgo.
Last week on the show.
Yeah, very nice. I didn't even think of that.
On Blu-ray. Blu-ray DVD combo pack, Dave.
There it is, right there.
Yeah. You think,
hey,
you think
Mac, does that scene look familiar on the cover of that Blu-ray? The hero riding a magic dragon while natives look upon him as their savior. Yeah.
Now, Dave, if you gave the movie a 60 when you reviewed it before, if it comes up Blu-ray and DVD, would you give it 120?
I would. Okay. I can't believe I gave it a 60. Wow, I must have been in a really good mood, I think.
It's pretty high.
It is pretty high. Let's see, a couple rows down from The Human Centipede is what I thought would be an affront to cinema, but actually wasn't that bad. Apparently, the Karate Kid remake.
Really?
I mean, I don't know. I hold the first Karate Kid in very high esteem, so...
Right. Yeah, I decided to skip the original. I decided to skip the remake. I pulled the original off my shelf and just watched it instead.
That's a timeless classic.
It is. It's really great. So yeah, no, it isn't. On the cover art, he's kind of holding his arm in a way that kind of looks kind of suggestive a little.
Yeah. I'm not sure what he's doing there.
I guess Mac. I don't know. I think we're reading a little bit.
Yeah, maybe so. All right, well, if we're going to go highbrow, we've got The Maltese Falcon on Blu-ray. Love that movie.
Oh, yeah. The Mad Max on Blu-ray. I don't think I've ever seen the original, the first Mad Max. Is that...
Yeah, I've only seen bits of it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty different from the other two, actually. It's a lot less... It's a lot sort of... It's more grounded, and it's a lot more kind of harsh and grittier.
So less humongous, right?
That's right, yeah.
Ooh, now this is something I'm very interested in seeing. Troll 2.
that's coming out?
That is the movie. That has long been regarded as one of the all-time worst movies ever.
Yeah, it's
and in a gleefully bad way. So
it's gained a lot of fame because it's the website Rotten Tomatoes has it at the very bottom of its list. It's the lowest rated.
Well, I mean, there's a whole documentary made about that movie. So.
Right.
So yeah, that's something I definitely look forward to seeing.
But if you don't see Troll 1 first, how will you be able to follow all the
apparently, they are completely continuity. Different. Totally. In fact, they're not even trolls in this movie.
Okay.
I've read enough reviews and said this, they're not even trolls. So I don't think the word trolls just, even mentioned in it.
I'd say I remember watching the original Troll a lot when I was younger. I don't know why, but I remember liking it. It used to be on TV from time to time.
I did not see the first Troll, I have to say.
I saw it once when I was a kid, and I barely remember it. Nice. So there's Secret of the Kells that I was just talking about.
Very nice.
And speaking of remakes, we got the remake of Friday the 13th. What's wrong with me? Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that even existed. Now, there's a show that you like, I think, Eric, right? Monk, the complete series?
Yeah. That's a good show.
All right. Well, you're right, though. There's lots and lots to choose from. They're obviously starting their holiday push here, so you're seeing a lot of stuff hit Blu-ray. Big releases and kind of cult classics on the way. So, all right, well, gentlemen, in a really sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week, Mac.
Let's see. How about Perpetual Motion Freestyle?
That's good. Eric.
I had that on my list. I'm going to go with Ultimate Submissions.
Yeah, that's mine.
Sorry.
Oh, crap. All right. How about... let's go with... Man, come on. There's got to be something in here. How about... Man, I can't even find anything that's loose that I can use. I'm sure there's... Okay, here we go. I will go... All right, Wild Hogs. That's what I'll do.
That works. My backup was Primera Fila.
Wow.
I would have gone with Bones if you'd taken everything else.
That's good. That's true. Hey, real quick, and speaking of the Human Centipede, a couple rows up, there's something called the Great Music Caper. It looks like an animated film featuring centipedes. Are those centipedes? I don't know.
So, is that a remake of the Great Muppet Caper?
All right, let's move along to our ambush topic segment. And, you know, this works, just random topics that we'll toss at each other right now. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, well, we're going around in a circle here back to the start of the show because my ambush topic is scenes from movie or TV featuring pizza.
Pizza. I'll jump right in with Spaceballs, Pizza the Hut.
Oh, of course.
Which is actually, it's weird. I remember being on the playground with some friends in elementary school and coming up with that idea before, not for the movie, but just that character. And it's, granted, it's kind of low-hanging fruit. It's not like it's, you know, the funniest joke in the world, but apparently Mel Brooks came up with a joke that, you know, 8-year-olds could come up with.
Hey, great minds.
I guess so.
I guess the live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which I still have a very soft spot in my heart for, but you know, they really maintain the pizza-loving nature of the turtles there. So
is that the one where they flip the pizza up and they use their cut it up into slices in midair?
They're very good, very good. You built on that suggestion very well because that's all I had. I just had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to work with, so.
Did they order pizza? I mean, does it?
Yeah, they pick it up. Yeah, like I think they either pick it up dressed incognito, or like the guy would drop it down the sewer or something.
Right,
he'd hand out the money, and they would swap it. Like in the
that's right. The delivery guy shows up, and he's by the grate, and the address is something and something and 3/4, and the delivery guy can't find it because
there's hey dude or something like that, and then he slides it down.
Yeah, that sounds right. I'm just confused as to why the pizza was not pre-sliced. I mean, I don't want to poke holes in the realism of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, maybe they said, and don't slice the pizza. You know, maybe they just specifically articulated that. So,
okay.
Yeah. I'm just trying to defend the gritty realism of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's fine.
Okay.
Well, for mine, I had I went with back to good old Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street and Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4. There's a scene where Freddy confronts a hero, Alice, and he's got a pizza in front of him. and all of the little pepperoni and sausage on the pizzas are actually the heads of all the people Freddy's killed in the movie up to that point.
Of course.
And they're all going like, no, don't eat me, no. Yeah, that was pretty freaky. Although perhaps you could argue that maybe it was special effects for the sake of special effects.
Now, like Nightmare on Elm Street tended to embrace towards the end, they embraced a lot of marketing slogans and stuff, you know. Now you're playing with power, for example. Did he say, like, avoid the Noid, you know, or something like that? No?
Oh, that'd be great, but I think the Noid and Freddy kind of exist in that same universe, though. Oh,
yeah. Freddy versus the Noid.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Okay, how about... I guess I'll go next here. Pretty easy. Climbing a steep mountain.
Dave, yeah, I'm going to have to lean on your... you're going to have to help me out here with your James Bond knowledge.
Okay. For your eyes only. That's what you're thinking.
Is it? I thought it was View to a Kill.
Is it the one where it's like at the end and he's climbing up to get to the fortress and like he's like dangling from the rope? Is that what he's you're thinking?
Dangling from the rope, and then one bad guy starts to climb down a little ways to cut the rope.
Yeah, that's For Your Eyes Only.
Oh,
yeah.
For Your Eyes Only. Okay. Yeah.
That's a good scene.
It's a great scene.
Great practical stunt work in that scene.
It is, and it's even though it's building up to the end of the movie, it's such a slow burn, you know.
Right.
On hanging there, and the bad guy slowly creeping down to cut the.
I mean, that's another notable thing about that movie, like versus other Bond movies that end in this huge bombastic firefight or action sequence, you know, in like some ornate set. This one was a lot more low key, but memorable, even more memorable, I think. You know, so
yeah, definitely. People give the Roger Moore movies crap, but there was some good stuff in those movies.
Yeah, there's good stuff in one movie, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, I'm going to go with the beginning of Star Trek V.
Oh, and, yeah.
Captain Kirk is sending El Capitan. And Spock flies up with his rocket boots or whatever.
What were the odds that William Shatner could actually complete a partial climb like that?
Like which William Shatner? Like modern Priceline William Shatner or
William Shatner? 60s? Whenever that was filmed, William Shatner.
So 1989.
I'll even tell you, I'll take 60s William Shatner. I don't know. It never struck me as the most coordinated guy, especially in some of his action stuff. So,
hey, how come those jet boots never appeared in any other Star Trek? Like the Next Generation.
Those would have been handy. I don't know. Those would have been handy. Yeah, yeah.
I think they were so advanced then that those rocket boots were just basically considered camping gear. they were only good for camping.
Manufactured by Coleman.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with one of my. I thought you were going to take. I thought this would have been taken, so I'm glad it survived. But again, one of my favorite hard R 90s over the top action movies, Cliffhanger. Starring Stallone, and there's a lot of mountain climbing, and Stallone does a lot of that stuff, actually, so, you know, props him, but there's a good amount of just sheer rock face climbing and swinging across rocks and tossing bad guys off of cliffs, and it's a Rennie Harlan movie, which is, he actually did some pretty decent, you know, R-rated action stuff, Die Hard 2, which I think is underappreciated, but... He got some good shots of, I think it was the Alps where they shot that. It's supposed to be the Rockies, but they shot in the Alps. So, so it looked pretty nice, too. So, go see Cliffhanger. All right, Eric, wrap us up.
All right. Well, based on the baseball documentary I've been watching, pick a TV series or a movie you'd want to see get the in-depth Ken Burns documentary treatment.
It's got to be Saved by the Bell, I guess, right? It's got to be the answer. I mean, they did a true Hollywood story on it, but I was left pretty disappointed. They didn't really dish a lot of dirt on that. So I'd like to see Ken Burns just really dig in and get to the core of Saved by the Bell. You know?
Be a lot of on-set photos that sort of slowly pan across while someone describes, you know, what was going on in the background.
That's right. You know, zooming out of, slowly panning away from Kevin Screech's sidekick robot.
They get some famous voice actors to read letters that the cast wrote to each other.
Yeah, I think who would be a good actor to
Did you read those?
Yeah, like do a, the voiceover. Distinguished.
Like a Jeff Bridges, maybe.
Morgan Freeman, perhaps. Morgan Freeman. What would that be called? What the name of that? We have to name these documentaries too, I guess. You know,
sure.
Ken Burns.
Ken Burns' Bell.
Bayside.
Bayside.
Let's see. I'm going to go with the a movie series. How about The Toxic Avenger?
Yikes. Do we really want to peel back that? It's my cousin.
There's certainly a lot of unseen depth there, with Toxie and his blind girlfriend, and the shot of the car crash that's in all four movies that's identical. We can kind of go into why that's not so much a money saver, but it's hidden nuance, as it were.
And what would the name of that one be? Toxic?
Toxy?
Behind the Mop?
Or what was his name before he was Toxy? It was Melvin, right?
No clue.
From Melvin to Toxy.
That's good. Like from Justin to Kelly?
There's another Ken Burns documentary waiting.
All right, what's yours, Eric?
I'd like to see an in-depth look at the Mystery Science Theater.
Ooh, nice.
They've done some kind of takes on it. I know in the 20th anniversary box set, the special feature, the big one that was spread across all four movies, or at least three of the four, was kind of them talking about making the show. But I don't know. I think that there's a lot there. There's such a kind of a do-it-yourself free spirit to the show. I think it would fit the Ken Burns, American pioneer formula pretty
nice.
Well.
Yes.
Now, would Tom and Crow, would they be interviewed like in character?
I don't know. Well, I think you probably do maybe the voiceover thing, reading. I don't know. I don't know what you do. I mean, would Ken Burns be in on the joke, or would it be this serious thing? I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know. I'm just imagining this. How like in the baseball doc, the people are just interviewed with against the black background. I'm just seeing Tom Servo in one of those serious interviews. And
going you could do that,
About his underwear collection.
That'd be good. Well, I guess if Ken Burns were going to do a Mystery Science Theater documentary, he'd have to have some sort of a sense of humor. So, so yes, I say yes.
And then what was the name of that one?
Deep 13? No.
Well, if his new one is the 10th inning, then this should be Deep 14.
Could be. Or maybe just movie signed.
Oh, there you go.
That'd be good.
All right. Well, I think we'll end this podcast here. So thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is the email address. Facebook.com/Friday Filibuster is our Facebook page, which probably need to update it with some stuff. So, feel free to join and update as well. And as always, check out DVD Verdict and TV Verdict, Cinema Verdict and Pixel Verdict, and coming soon, Daily Verdict. Whoa, sexy. So, Eric, Mac, thank you so much. Mac, take us away.
Pizza, pizza.